This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is an interesting day for us here because of a performance last night by Kansas that is leaving fans very concerned about the immediate future, perhaps about the long-term future. We got a lot to get to today as it pertains to the Jayhawks, and we'll do that here for the next few hours. So glad to be here with you. It's Jake Albrock and Tommy Caster, Max Power Producing. We've got giveaways galore for you today, opportunities to win a cruise, opportunities to get out to Vegas to watch some college basketball, to win a little HTO. So those opportunities will come throughout. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. 97.5 FM over the air here on the Odyssey app. Thanks for watching us on our video streams on 12 News Connected. You can reach out and comment with us on YouTube, on X today. Glad to have all those opportunities for you. Tommy, it's funny. One of our real good KU fans tweets us to ask us to please only talk spring training today, or how Tiger Woods got the wrong club last night in the simulator league that they've got going on. Anything. But KU today, which, of course, we cannot oblige.
Well, look, I would have rather watched two more hours of the TGL Simulator Golf League. They came on before the Kansas game last night. I would have rather ESPN just did that all night long than subjecting everybody to what we ended up seeing in Provo last night. It was a disaster of epic proportions for Kansas.
You and Bill Self, I think, agrees with you. He'd have much rather seen that, too. It is, I think, and, you know, we got hyperbole here because it just happened, but it probably feels like the worst regular season loss of Bill Self's tenure at Kansas. It was an embarrassment. And by the number it was, yeah. Right? It was the biggest loss. But I mean, like, more than just the score, when you consider where things are going and what was sitting there for them, to have that happen at that moment, that's to me the disaster. Like, it, you know, BYU comes out and shoots the lights out like they did. And I know some of that was, I know a lot of that was self-inflicted. Like, okay, fine. That wasn't it though. Right. We can all see it. Like, it's all very obvious. Now, some of the things people were saying quietly about the psychology of this team are now very front and center. We will dig in again. We have Shreya Zlata coming in the next hour to help us with that too, which will be good because that's the thing now. Like, what on earth does this mean for this team? Because this isn't now just like an ability on the court, a rotation, a minute, a limitations physically. This has spiraled into something much larger, as to Bill Self saying last night after the game, basically, we got to get away from each other. Like, we just need some time away. And I appreciate the honesty because we can all see that. Like, that this is spiraling out of control. So we'll talk about it in the immediate future. We'll talk about it in the long-term future. I don't even know what to say. I mean, you know, but it is, it's out there and it's bad. It's real bad. And it probably has to be discussed as a bigger picture thing here, this year.
I think it does. I mean, I said yesterday on the show, before even this debacle happened last night, that I feel like there are holistically, some major issues from a 30,000-foot view that even, you know, viewing outside of the context of what's exactly happening this season and what the Jayhawks need to do with this team, there are some larger scale major issues. Like, I believe that we are watching in real time, if it's not the end, at least the beginning of the end of the Bill Self tenure at Kansas. I don't think he's going to be doing this for a whole lot longer anyway, but performances like what we saw last night and what we've seen holistically this season and last year, basically ever since they won the national championship, lead me to believe that all that's doing is just speeding up the inevitable. And again, I have no idea, I have no insight, no intel to tell me that this is it for him. It very well could not be it for him. But I do think that when you're, almost mid-60s, you've won a couple national championships, you look around and you're like, do I really want to keep doing this? Like, do I really want to work and live in this reality in college basketball? It's the same kind of conversation that Coach K had and Roy Williams had and Jay Wright had and Tony Bennett has had recently and Jim Boeheim has had. Like, I think that we're getting closer to that, and I think performances like what we saw last night just sort of speed up the inevitable.
Yeah, look, I think that's way too speculative. I think there are plenty of old guys.
Of course, it's speculative. I don't have any intel.
No, and I don't mean that. I don't mean that to, because you're not the only person saying that. What I mean is, like, there are a lot of old guys that are fine, and I don't think that I've had any indication to the same. Like, to the same degree those other guys you mentioned there, like, they were kind of like vocal opponents to all these changes. Bill Self's never been that. I think more than anything, and I mean this with all the love in the world, I really do, I think KU fans are very spoiled to never have to go through things like this basically in any individual season for 20 years. Like, this stuff happens. Kansas's greatness, Bill Self's greatness, has been the consistency at which this kind of stuff never happens. Like, they just don't have years where they're not at the top. Like, they don't. And that's what I think is so jarring to so many KU fans. It's like, now we're at this kind of at 2 years in a row. Like, what in the world? But to me, it's the same group of players.
But I think you just answered your own question there about how Kansas fans don't deal with this sort of thing. Like, they've never really had to in the last two decades. And it's because Bill Self has always been able to coach his way out of it and to get the most out of players that, you know, maybe are not always the most physically gifted, but he's always able to get the most out of them. He's not able to do that this year. That's a difference. That's a change. And I think that if I were Bill Self, I would be like, man, like, things are different now. I'm not sure that this is what I want to do for a long time in the future. And maybe he can work his way out of it. Maybe with a brand new roster next year. And let's be real. It's going to be a brand new roster. Make no mistake about it. Next season, maybe that invigorates him. Maybe that challenge invigorates him. But I could also see it going the other direction where he's just like, man, this isn't for me anymore.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I think he's too competitive to let this be the end for him. I don't. I think he still loves this, and that's the thing. I don't know that, you know, those other coaches you mentioned.
Did you watch him on the bench last night or after the game? You think he loves this?
He loves college basketball. Okay. He loves coaching. He doesn't love this current moment. Nobody does. But we'll dig into this a lot as we make our way through today. Chiefs salary cap news, sort of. We'll try to dig in a little bit. It gets very confusing when you start talking about tagging and what it all means. The report is that they don't intend to franchise tag anybody, which it doesn't actually surprise me. I don't know who they'd franchise tag, but we'll get into that reporting and look at the roster and see if that would have made sense for anybody or if that alters anything we sort of see potentially happening with them. And then we'll get around. Look, we'll look around the NFL. We haven't spent a lot of time on that this week because we've had so much college basketball early in the week. But there are interesting things happening at quarterback and a few other places. So we'll take a dive into all of it today as we make our way through Sports Daily. It's crazy that, you know, we're not going to have Shocker basketball still until tomorrow. It's been a long time off for the Shockers, but maybe we've got some Shocker talk in there as well. We'll come back. We'll dig into the Jayhawks next on Sports Daily.
Take it easy, folks. It's snow picnic out there. I snow what you mean.
Call Mr. Plow. That's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. Your legend begins aboard the Disney Destiny, the all-new ship from Disney Cruise Line, sailing November of 2025. Log in, listen to KFH on Odyssey for a chance to win a trip for four to set sail on the Disney Destiny in this national contest. All you need to do is listen for an hour on the Odyssey app. Find out more at kfhradio.com. Welcome back, everybody. Tommy, we're talking KU here. A disaster last night. Worst by the numbers loss of Bill Self's career at KU, 91-57 to BYU, a game that spiraled out of control, a game where KU, I mean, look, they gave up, and BYU just shot them out of the gym, and they just, like, there's so many little things, and we'll dig into all of this too, little things about how that happens, why that happens, the concern of there being any chance at, you know, playing well at any point the rest of the season and whatever that looks like, that all exists too. The X's and O's piece of it. And we'll have Sharia Slatus help us with that in the next hour. But I think what's on KU fans' mind in the immediate is, what does this look like big picture? I think everybody's really ready to just say, you know, this team's not going to do anything. Okay, fine. We'll get into that too. But it's all about now, like, what does this look like big picture? So I'm just I said this before we went to the break, and let me explain, because I don't want people to take it the wrong way. I think KU fans are spoiled in the Bill Self era. I think never having bad seasons, like truly bad seasons, is something that's hard to wrap your head around when you haven't had to do it in two plus decades. But if you go, and I did, and I pulled up, I just take the three that I kind of put up there in, you know, in the modern era with Self and even through Dan Hurley in there. But Roy Williams, Coach K, Tom Izzo, like these blue blood coaches. And I'm just to make sure I'm looking back and they have all the success. But all of these guys, Roy Williams at North Carolina, even after Kansas, had tons of years with double digit losses. Mike Krzyzewski went through very brief. Krzyzewski's the hardest to find him in. His is the longest sustaining success and probably the best comparison to with his titles and everything. And then Tom Izzo, we know, has these frequently too, where they'll have years. I mean, Tommy, the 4 years before this year, Michigan State's lost double digit games every year. Their finishes in the Big Ten are 8th, 7th, 4th, and 6th, right? So like coaches go through this stuff. Bill Self just never has oversustained. And so I bring all that up just to say big picture, because I don't know, like you don't know what Bill Self's thinking in that regard. I think right now for me, it's just more of this particular group is not going to work. And if you take away this particular group, you take away probably the two worst seasons Self has had at Kansas. And so is it them or is it him? It's them. Like, it's them for me. And so I think that's where I land today.
It's a combination. I mean, who put the team together? Who put the team together? And who decided?
Of course.
Who decided after 11 losses a season ago to run it back with Dickinson, Harris, and Adams? That was Bill Self.
I'm not saying Bill Self doesn't deserve criticism and all this. Of course he does. What I'm saying is the reasons for the struggle are more on the players than it are that Bill Self can't coach in the modern era of college basketball.
Yeah, no, I don't think that that's the case. I don't think that that's, for a lot of people, I'm not sure that that's even in the realm of what they're thinking about right now. I don't think that there's this thought about, oh, Bill Self just can't cut it in, you know, today's college basketball. I don't think that for a lot of KU fans, that's the narrative right now. I think it's Bill Self has had, let's just be honest, a pretty poor few years of bringing in players in the offseason. I mean, remember how highly regarded and highly touted Hunter Dickinson was. I mean, at the time,
yeah, it's 2 years. Same, and it's the same.
You're right. I'm talking about multiple off seasons here, where you know Hunter Dickinson at the time was regarded as maybe the best transfer player ever to enter the portal, right? And you know, like that's not necessarily on Bill Self that Dickinson hasn't really lived up to that. And I think it's fair to say that Dickinson hasn't really lived up to that in his 2 years wearing a Kansas jersey. I don't think that. You know, you go and you look at what guys like Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr did at their respective schools, and you look at that and you're like, all right, cool. Like, those guys can come in and help Kansas immediately, and they haven't. I think that's on both the players and the development from Bill Self. Like, I think that it's a combination of multiple things. So, yeah, I'm not going to just like pin it on one side. I think there have been epic failures of massive proportions on both the side of the players and the side of the coaching staff.
I agree. Everybody deserves criticism for what's happening, but I don't think, because I don't want to be revisionist either. I loved the roster going into this season, plus Storr and Griffin, because what it appeared was that after last year, when they flat just weren't talented enough, right? After Artario Morris went through his stuff and it was like, man, they've got a talent. They just lack the talent to get it done. That's what it appeared like last year. Well, then they go in and they replace that talent with some talent, right? Or they replace those players with some straight up legit talent, and it still doesn't work. So then it's like, okay,
like everybody and their dog, I think, recognizes and realizes that the only way that new talent coming in was going to work with the existing players is that they were going to have to switch up the way that they deployed that talent. And sure, like I'm not saying that guys like Griffin and Storr deserve a pass. They've been at times flat out awful for this team this season.
awful.
AJ Storr is unplayable. Like, you can't even put him on the court right now. That's on him. But also, I don't think he's been put, and I don't think Rylan Griffin's been put. I don't think that these newer guys have been put in great positions to be successful either. It's like they have a really short leash. They play a couple of minutes. They make a mistake. They're back on the bench. And there are other guys, the big three, that have earned Bill Self's trust over multiple seasons where they make mistakes as well. DeJuan Harris had a couple of terrible turnovers last night. He's not getting his butt back on the bench. He's playing 35-plus minutes because they have to have, like, there's kind of a double standard here. And, that happens in every program. Coaches have guys that they trust and guys that are in the doghouse. It happens all the time. But I think it's a combination of both, you know, guys like Griffin and Storr and Shaq Moore and even Zeke Mayo to an extent that they're not given the leash to be able to be successful. And that's where it becomes psychological, because then when they get on the court, I think that they're so like worried and so scared that they're going to screw up that they do screw up, and then they're back on the bench and all Bill Self is doing is just riding Adams and Harris and Dickinson over and over and over and over and over again. I think that's a huge reason why Flory Badunga went through that lull over a couple of weeks, because he wasn't playing great, but he wasn't given the opportunity to work through it either. He just got his butt right back on the bench. And then you're riding Hunter Dickinson, who can't play 30 plus minutes in a game. Like, I think that it's a combination of multiple things that have snowballed. And now we're here and we're trying to dissect all of this.
I think it's different for each player. Badunga's a freshman. That's not abnormal, right, to have that. And it's certainly not abnormal for Bill Self, who has always leaned on his experienced players. We've said for years, Bill Self, and this, you know, prior to the last couple of years as this thing has just gotten crazy in the portal, to me has always been the best balancer of program building and blue chip, you know, short-term additions. He's always, to me, blended that the best. I think it's a big reason their floor has been so high is because they've always had a ton of experience and guys that know the system on the, like, all the time. They've always had that. Well, that's to me, like, if we're talking big picture, that's what gets really interesting. I mean, maybe you build this program around what next year? Flory Badunga and maybe Rylan Griffin, maybe, or probably not Rylan Griffin.
Like, probably not that's Rylan Griffin.
That's what's going to be, to me now, very interesting, is how does that look? And now can we see that work? And we need more time than one particular group of players to make some proclamation on whether Bill Self can still do it. Like, I've heard that and read that from KU fans. Like, there are, and to me, like, it's way, 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 way too early. I look at it for sure more as, this group doesn't have it, and they haven't had it for 2 years, and they got too much time, basically, and that's why you're dealing with what you're dealing with. But and then it goes back to, like, the X's and O's. The infuriating part is sometimes they do have it, though, right? Sometimes they do, and
when?
Most of the time lately they when they beat Iowa State,
yeah,
when they
2 weeks
beat
ago,
when they did. No, what I'm saying is, like, this same group of players at times, X's and O's wise, has had it. But then you see game like last night, and I don't know what the exact number is. There was like a 5-minute stretch or something in the first half where BYU doesn't score. Game minutes. And KU does nothing. KU is so bad right now offensively that I think when they're out there, they just give up, right? They can't get anything offensively, and then it bleeds over, and BYU, man, that color guy last night was crushing it. Like, he painted
great.
That picture so well.
And he was spot on.
Within a game, like, just how wild it is to see a team not even try to defend anything in that game. Rick is chiming in Rick has had an issue with the transfer portal era, but in asks the next time we'll see Christian Brown or Baji. It's impossible in this environment. I would say, Rick, that KJ Adams and DeJuan Harris have been here for like a decade. So that, like, they still have that.
But tell me in the last two off seasons, or even three off seasons, who has Bill Self gotten in the portal that has been a game changer, a difference maker for this team, because I don't know if he has.
I mean, Dickinson has. Yeah, he's just not good enough.
Right. Like, okay, so outside of Hunter Dickinson, who was the most prized transfer ever in this era, who have they gotten? Who have they gotten out of the portal?
Remy
that has
Martin
been,
helped them win a
I'm
national
I'm talking about
title.
In the last two off seasons, after the national title season, after Remy Martin, because I can't think of anybody. Like, the names that come to mind, they got Nick Timberlake. Did that do anything? You know, they had Zuby Ejiofor. He left. You know, they got, of course, Rylan Griffin and A.J. Storr. Those two guys haven't done a thing. Elmarco Jackson is on the team. He hasn't given them any. He's been hurt, but he hasn't given them anything. Like, there have not been.
Those aren't portal guys, though. Elmarco Jackson.
I'm talking about newcomers that have come into this team one way or the other, whether it's transfers or recruits. I can't think of anybody of note. Can you?
Well, yes, Dickinson and Zeke Mayo's
outside of Dickinson.
15, Zeke Mayo's averaging 15 points a game this year.
Yeah, and they lost by 40 last night.
Right, but are we saying that's because Zeke Mayo's been a disaster?
No.
I guess I don't understand.
They got MJ Rice. Did he do anything for him? Ernest Uday. They brought him in the last couple of seasons. He didn't do anything. Zach Clements was supposed to be this prized guy coming in. He's been awful. Like, I don't know, outside of Hunter Dickinson, that has been like the golden goose. Okay, and Zeke Mayo, two guys in the last two plus seasons. It hasn't worked. It has
not. I mean,
Johnny
Furphy was an NBA guy last year. They're not fitting. They're not fitting.
Yeah.
I get it. They're not fitting together. But it's not because they're not bringing in enough talented players. They're not bringing in the right talented players.
You're right.
And this is where I'm still like, if KU was going into these off seasons and not able to bring anybody in, that would be concerning. But they are. They're still getting, you know, prized players in the portal. They're just not the right ones, obviously, collectively, the last couple of years. But they're still getting, it's not quite pick of the litter. They're just not picking right, right? Like, and so, again, to me, like, all of this big picture stuff, like, I need another year. Let me just put it as bluntly as I can. I need a year without Hunter Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson's the problem. And he's the most talented guy they brought in. Okay, he's not a Bill Self player. He can't defend. He's slow. He's not athletic at all. He's not a Bill Self player.
He can't rebound.
He's so gifted down low offensively that it has masked the elephant in the room, in that he is not the player Bill Self can win with. Flat out, period. And he has been such a focal point because he is so gifted in what he does, that it is, to me, been very distracting to the fact that they need a reset from him so badly, so badly. And now we're seeing it as loudly as we can see it. We're seeing reports that everybody else is like yelling at each other and the coaches, and then they're like, where's Dickinson? Like, you can't not be the leader of this team. And you know,
he's never been the leader of this team.
And that's a big problem. And I don't like attacking college kids, even though he's a grad student. He's like 22, 23
years old. He's like 48 years old.
What I'm saying is, like, I don't want to put all that, you know, but to me, like, that's been the problem. And I've been telling you that since the Duke game, that I got a problem with his vibe. I don't like it. Like, it hasn't worked for me. And I don't ever really get into that too publicly, but man, I think they've got a Hunter Dickinson problem.
But
if I'm being 100% honest,
I think it even goes further than that. And because I don't think that you're wrong as far as his vibe and as far as his lack of leadership, his lack of, I mean, whatever you want to call it, that you're right there. But I think it goes a step further when you're actually talking about the game plan on the floor. I think that it is absolutely coaching malpractice, after what we saw a season ago, for Bill Self to look at Hunter Dickinson first off, and then beyond that, DeJuan Harris and KJ Adams, and say, you know what? We just need to change the pieces around them and we'll be good. Because I think everybody in the entire world saw them lose 11 games last season, and in the way in which they did it, and look at those three guys and say, yep, we just need to add some supporting pieces around them and we'll be okay. I think that's coaching malpractice because you and I talked about this last night as the game was going on. Nobody on any team in America views KJ Adams or DeJuan Harris as an offensive threat. KJ Adams was playing the three last night. Bill Self put him on the perimeter and everybody gave him 20 feet. Like, he's not a deep offensive threat at all, but he's in that position on the perimeter. And what that does, and nobody thinks DeJuan Harris is an offensive threat either. So it allows opponents defensively to collapse on Hunter Dickinson. And that's not fair to Hunter Dickinson. Like, in his defense, that's not fair to him when there's no other threat whatsoever around him. Defenses know that. They know that the only option offensively that the Jayhawks have, I guess they have two options. Number one is to try to send it down to Dickinson. Option number two is to just, like, wildly flail and throw up insane shots from beyond the arc, which Kansas did especially in the second half last night. Those are the options. And so it is malpractice to look at those three guys at the end of last season and say, I think we're okay. Let's just go and get a couple of other transfers in here and we'll be fine. Because I don't know if Bill Self was watching the same team a season ago that the rest of us were. Those three are not fine. They weren't fine a season ago, and they're not fine this season. Whether you're talking about their play on the court, their attitude, their intensity, the way that, like, that it's not working, it's not gelling, and it's comprehensive. There isn't one thing that you can just pin it on. I think that there are a lot of symptoms, and one of the things that I thought about last night, you and I were talking about this too, if Kansas needs a bucket, who do you go to? I don't know. They need a stop, who do they go to? I don't know. They need a rebound, who do they go to? I don't know.
Look, we're going to continue to talk KU here. Tommy, you called it coaching malpractice to surround these three players with other players and think it's going to work. I don't want to have revisionist history personally. I thought it was going to work this year. I certainly thought their issue last year was they didn't have enough talent around those three guys. They didn't have enough offensive firepower. They didn't have enough talent. Well, they went out and they answered all those questions with some players that seemingly on paper fit exactly what last year's team needed. Didn't work. So I don't want to be revisionist, though, because I thought it would work. I thought it was a good fit. I thought they should have been preseason number one, and I thought this team had a chance to win a national championship. Absolutely before the season, I thought all of those things. So I'm not going to call it malpractice in the offseason because I thought before the season they did a good job. Didn't work. Doesn't happen to be the right group of guys for whatever reason. So again, I don't want to sit here now and pretend like something I thought was going to be so good is not. And
but I think it's okay. I want to counter that because I think it's okay to be revisionist at this point. Like, I think it's okay to go back because look, like at the time, remember, like I've been doing a lot of like retrospective thinking about last season. And all the time that guys like Nick Timberlake were getting piled on, you know, and like they didn't have depth and they didn't have, you know, the shooters and things like that. That's where the focus and attention was put. And, you know, rightfully so, I think, to an extent. There wasn't a whole lot of, at least to my recollection, there wasn't a whole lot of conversation about, like, should we look and see if, like, Dickinson is the issue a year ago. Right. And so I think it's OK, like, to be revisionist and look back on it and say, man, maybe the focus was at the wrong place. Maybe the focus rather than
for sure was. Yeah. It was.
Rather than like, hey, they don't have the shooters and like they're leaning on a guy in Nick Timberlake because Arterio Morris is an idiot and couldn't play with the team and was gone, you know, rightfully so and everything that all they need to do is just reload at shooter and they'll be OK. And I think that. And I'll be the first to admit, like, I probably overlooked the fact that it on an 11-loss team, Bill Self decided to run back 60% of the starting lineup from an 11-loss team. You know, right. Like, I think we gave the benefit of the doubt because, again, to your point, KU fans are spoiled. The program has never been down before, like, you know, in the last 20-plus years. And so I think there was that benefit of the doubt that had been earned over time. Like, hey, they lost 11 games. They had a lot of deficiencies. Let's run back the majority of the starting lineup and replace the supporting pieces around them, and they should be okay. Turned out to be the wrong decision for sure.
Right, and I think that the reason, like, I give more grace to it, I think, than you do, is because you're bringing back production, right? You're bringing back you're bringing back the point guard on the team that was the starting point guard for your last national championship team. Like, it's easy to look back at it critically now, but at the time, like, we weren't looking in the right places. The problem with that 60% of the starting lineup is none of them can shoot, right? Like, yeah. And so when these other players that have come in, and by the way,
those three can't defend either. Let's be honest. I mean, well, KJ Adams can be, a little bit, but yeah.
Yes, they can. They should they be. Don't. Hunter Dickinson's a different story, but Harris and Adams can defend. They absolutely can defend because we've seen them do it. They're just not right now. But what's crazy about it is, like, we keep focusing on Storr and Griffin, but Zeke Mayo has come in and shot well. Like, done exactly what we thought they needed last year.
And again, that puts the glaring focus on, okay, maybe it's not the fact that they don't have shooters. Maybe the issue is the big three, you know? Like that.
It is. It totally is. And it's the offensive deficiencies collectively of those three together that is the problem. And from an X's and O's perspective, it is so obviously the problem that they just don't have enough offense there, and now it has bled into everything else that they do. Mm-hmm. Last night it bled into the way they were defending or the effort they were giving in that particular game. There was obviously a psychological component to that also, that, you know, that's out there, and Bill Self basically alluded to it after the game and saying, we got to get away from each other, this has been a really bad trip.
We are also, so, by the way, we're also, you said it has bled into other areas, psychologically, defensively, all these different components, and you're spot on that. Here's an area, and again, this goes back to my original point at the very beginning of the show when I said I wouldn't be overly shocked if Bill Self just decides to be like, look, I don't know if this is what I want to do anymore, because it has even trickled into lineup decisions for Bill Self. He is grasping at straws. The GOAT in the game right now, the dean of college basketball right now in Bill Self, is grasping at straws with his lineups, trying to figure out a way to make it work and tinker his way through it. Case in point, the starting lineup last night, he put three bigs in the starting lineup against a BYU team, and we saw it last night, that just want to launch it from three. And he started, and I know the starting lineup didn't last very long, don't get me wrong, but he started KJ Adams at the three, Flory Badunga at the four, and Hunter Dickinson at the five. That's flailing and grasping at straws and trying to find anything that will work, like any kind of spark whatsoever. Like, it's even trickling down to that.
But what is he supposed to do?
I'm not saying that there's a better alternative. I'm just saying
he gets a ton of crap for not changing the lineup up. So then he does. But
you look at three bigs in the lineup against a team that it just like wants to launch it from three.
Because you're trying to go strength versus strength. You're trying to push them
and
around.
They fell behind.
But if they shoot well, it obviously doesn't work, and it wasn't going to because they were shooting well. But otherwise, like, you'll get all the rebounds. You push them around down low. You build your offense down low. Like, you're just trying something. But he's got to try. Bill Self's not going to give up on this season. Okay, so like, that's not going to happen. The coaches aren't going to give up on this season. They're going to continue to try to coach this team to the best of their ability, to the best place. Their problem now is they have a psychological issue, not just an X's and O's issue. And from an X's and O's perspective, we cannot ignore what they've been able to do at times this season from an X's and O's perspective and some of the big wins that they have. The problem is now you've got a psychological issue, and that is wild. That's even more unpredictable than, you know, an X's and O's perspective. Like, what do you do now that you've potentially lost a locker room, or there is, whether it's division in the locker room or division among the players and coaches or players and players or whatever that is, now you got to deal with that. When you already had a glaring X's and O's thing that you had to try to work through. And so that's why for this season, it's like, yeah, I mean, whatever.
Throw your hands
like,
up in the air.
Knows?
And you know what? Like, yeah. I know I kind of say this tongue in cheek a little bit. I've given you a hard time off air about the amount of time we've talked about KU playing in Wichita for the NCAA tournament.
such a
but you know what? Like, they could do it now at this point. Like, they could be like a 7 seed and make it into Wichita.
I almost started the show with that just to mess with you. Yeah. Like, do you think there's still a chance they could come?
I mean, honestly, I think there's more of a chance today than there was yesterday.
What's like, amazing is over a week's time how much things can change. Because, by the way, I do think, and we'll talk about it as the tournament gets closer, because it's such a far away thing from what's even attainable for KU. But it is wildly disappointing that the preseason number one, when that's coming to your hometown and your hometown is like not depending on it, but really counting on what you saw the last time the tournament was here, which was packed arenas, which was packed practice games, which is the big reason the NCAA has made a commitment to come back to Wichita. Because let me tell you, as somebody who was in Omaha last year when the weather wasn't perfect, it was not like a hopping environment in what's normally a great host city, because KU wasn't there. And so like that really, 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 really sucks. Like, it sucks hard. And I feel bad for the businesses that have already made the investments that they're making. And look, you hope you get 4 or 5 really good fan bases, which is very much in the cards and very much on the table, and people will show out and it'll still be a great event, but it ain't going to be the same as if KU is down there. Just not.
But my point is, I think that they could at this point, like, I feel like they could as 7 or 8 seed, you know, could make it to Wichita.
I've never hoped for that sort of like, and I use the word collusion as a joke because it would just be luck of the draw at this point.
Yeah.
But if there was ever a time where the NCAA really did want to reward like KU with some special favorite treatment, God, I hope it's this year. I really do.
I do think
that even if they're gonna go be a first round exit, I'd rather it be in Wichita than Rhode Island.
I mean, I do think that we could be looking at a scenario where Kansas could enter the tournament without 20 wins. In fact, they could potentially end the season without 20 wins.
Where are they at right now?
Well, they have 17 right now, and they play Oklahoma State at home. You know, so you've got you should get that this weekend. You should. That might be their final regular season win. They go on the road at Colorado. Colorado's not good, but remember, Colorado pushed them to the brink inside Allen Fieldhouse not that long ago. And then you've got Texas Tech on the road at Houston and back at home against Arizona.
And the tournament, I think they'll get to 20. I think 20 is probably the number. I need the response to last night, because if there's not a good response to last night, then I'm right there with you. But I need the response from last night. There is still, and I'm an optimist, and I know you can jump through the screen at me. Now let's see how they respond to the lowest point, perhaps, of any regular season for Bill Self. Like, how does this group respond to what happened there on this Utah trip? Let's see that, because now it's a psychological game, right? Before we even get into the deficiencies of the X's and O's, which is where we were probably a week ago, now it's a psychological game. So how do they respond to it psychologically? Can they galvanize? Can they, similar to K-State, where there was obviously very clear division among players and coaches earlier this season, could they have that sort of spark, that sort of like, oh, okay, moment?
I don't think so.
I don't know. We've never had to do this before with Bill Self. That's what I mean. When I say spoiled, that's what I mean. Like, we've never had to do this before. In 20 years, Bill Self's never had this kind of a disconnect with players, which is unfathomable for everybody else across the country who's a college basketball fan to even imagine their team ever not having this kind of issue. We saw Wichita State have these kinds of issues in the Greg Marshall era. We've seen K-State. Like, you see it everywhere. You literally see it everywhere but Kansas. Like, it's like the only place where this doesn't happen from time to time.
And you get, like, Bill Self has had individual players that you look at and you're like, man, these guys do not get along.
Yeah.
But it's like a few, like, I remember Brandon Green is a guy that, like, they didn't get along and, like, they fought.
My
like,
favorite soundbite of all time.
You know,
by the
like
way.
Those things
is a walk-in soundbite.
Happen occasionally, but the rest of the team, like, rallies around Bill Self. That hasn't happened this season.
No, it hasn't. And so will it? Because, you know, at least in the case of DeJuan Harris and KJ Adams, you know, those are dudes that would go to war for Bill Self. So we'll see. It's crazy. We'll talk to Sharice Lotta about it in the second hour. We'll switch it up a little bit when we come back on Sports Daily. Another hour coming your way right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
We'll start this hour off with your chance to win some HTO. You can get a free iced tea right now. Good for either West, East Wichita, either one, or in Derby. All you got to do to enter the contest is text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. More than 26 flavors. So get in there and check them out. Good luck. We begin this hour, Tommy, with more college basketball talk. We'll have Sharia Slotta in the next segment. We'll have Chiefs talk as well as we get some news sort of with maybe their offseason plan and the salary cap and the franchise tags and all of those things. We'll get to that later in the hour as well. It's interesting. You remember when the state of Kansas had, you know, three incredible basketball programs? Boy, this has been a tough couple of years for us, for college basketball lovers, for people who follow and root for all three programs. Basically, it's been a rough couple of years here and you know, I really hope the Shockers get on a heater. I really hope K-State wins a couple and re-enters the bubble conversation, because I'm not sure between now and a month from now when the tournament begins, it's gonna be a little dicey emotionally. It'll be a little challenging for us here, because you've got different for very reasons, but you know, sort of trouble a brewing for everybody. So we'll see. KU loses just an absolute stinker last night, 91-57. It's hard to even say that out loud on the road. BYU.
Trivia question: do you know what the worst loss in school history was? I just told Max this.
No.
Okay, so it was 40 points. So they were flirting with that. They were flirting with losing by 40 last night. They lost by 40 points in the year 1900. KU lost to Nebraska. The final score of that game, 48-8.
Gross. Gross. That's disgusting. KU right now sits at 15 in the net. They continue to fall there. They are right now tied for 6th place in the Big 12 in a three-way tie.
But by the way, I'm sorry. Max had a great joke. I just, you know, told you that loss back in 1900. He was like, I'm pretty sure Hunter Dickinson was on the team back then.
Right. He's a bright-eyed freshman.
Yeah.
And you know, probably at Michigan at that point. Boy, it does. Like, it makes it so hard. Like this era. It is so difficult because you land a player like Dickinson and he can sneeze 16 points and 8 rebounds and it just isn't working. And then you get like, oh, good, you're going to come back as a grad student. And everybody's accepting. It's like, what a strange, strange concept now. I try to think back, like, what would you do in the old days? Let's go back to last year and pretend, because, you know, two of the three were lifers in the KU program. And just like the experience coming back, like, what would have happened in the old days if you had productive experience coming back that clearly wasn't working? Like, what would you have even done? Like, it's such a strange, this problem is so bizarre to even like try to grasp right now that it didn't work again. But what could you have done differently? Told those guys they can't come back? I mean, I guess. Like, it's weird. It's a weird thing. And it's like, oh man, all these new players, it's the transfer portal and it's all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Like, it's kind of not that, it's kind of the other players now that we're seeing are created this issue for 2 years. Dickinson obviously was a transfer portal guy, but he's not a one and done. He's been 2 years in the program now. Like, all these things, crazy. Like, it's a strange, like, this whole dynamic for KU is just very weird.
Yeah, a lot of other things have happened. Like, we've talked about the number of losses and how that's setting records for KU in a bad way and all these different things. I mentioned this before. I think I said this yesterday on the show, that since Thanksgiving, KU, they were 1-6 against teams that were projected to be in the NCAA tournament. Well, of course, now they're 1-7 with the loss to BYU because BYU, they're projected to be a tournament team. But let's even add K-State in there. K-State's been very fringy, on the bubble, like that sort of thing. So you can add another win, so 2-7, but then you have to also add a loss because KU lost to K-State in Manhattan, so 2-8. They're 2-8 against teams that are projected to either be in the NCAA tournament or on the fringe. 2-8. And both of those wins, one was against Kansas State, the other one was against Iowa State. The other time KU played those two teams, they lost to them. So Right. Even the two teams they've gotten wins against, they've also lost to. So 2-8 against either tournament or fringy bubble type teams.
Here's some optimism for you, college basketball fans, as you're talking about the fringe and bubble teams and KU not winning now for 8 games, 2 games in a row, which is another just crazy thing to think about, no matter who it is. They haven't won 2 games in a row in 8 games in 4 weeks, basically. If you look at what the Big 12 mess is going to be when it comes to tournament time, like it is, you've got 14 of 16 teams, Tommy. 14 of 16 who by net alone you could say with 5 games to play are bubble type teams, right? Any of that group of 14 goes on a 5-6-7 game heater here and could absolutely play their way into the tournament. That is, you want to talk about a wild and crazy finish to the college basketball season. And this is probably more of a K-State conversation. If we know in the Big 12 that Houston, Arizona, Iowa State, Texas Tech, maybe BYU just played themselves in, but I don't know that they're totally locked in yet. But Houston, Arizona, Iowa State, Texas Tech, and Kansas certainly are.
Is Kansas locked in? Let's be honest. Like, are they actually locked in?
Outside of losing every single game that they play the rest of the way, yes.
Let's say they win.
They're 15 in the night.
Let's just say they win Saturday at home against Oklahoma State. They go on the road at Colorado. They win. Then they lose their final three against top 25 teams. What is that? That puts them at 19-12 going into the Big 12 tournament. Let's say they get bounced in the first game, just hypothetically. 19-13 going.
Yes,
are they a lock at that point? You think?
Yeah.
At 19-13,
I think they are. Yes, I absolutely think they are because they have so many quality wins and they're so high in the net. They're not going to get kept out of the tournament. So they're as close to a lock as you can be. So those will get in. So after those five, right? Then you've got a collection of 9 teams, all within basically the top 75. They're all 9 teams within the top 75 of the net. Once you get into that, 70s, that's where you get your outlier teams that have made it. There haven't been very many, but there have been a couple. And then you can look at it as, okay, well, if it's in the 70s in the net, because Rutgers made that recently, okay, how many losses is it? We've seen teams a number of times over the years get in with 15 losses, I believe is the number there. Like that is all within range for all 9 of those teams to get in, to get on a heater. And I don't think the Big 12's only going to send 6 teams to the tournament. So, and real quick, Rick asked his net computer watching them about KU. Doesn't matter, Rick, because the games that they played at the beginning of the season and the games that they play at the end of the season are weighted the exact same. So you have a win against Duke that is weighted the same as a road loss to BYU by 30-something points. Doesn't matter when they played them. So when you look at their overall resume, that win against Duke, that win against Michigan State, like all that stuff, that matters just as much as what's going wrong for them late in the season. So it doesn't matter. But anyway, that is, like, imagine what this little stretch run's going to be like here. And if you're a K-State fan, it's the thing you're clinging on to. Like, I think at least one team's going to make it, if not two, and there's 9 of them in the mix here. All of these games are like bubbly type games. That's pretty cool. That's pretty wild in this new Big 12.
It's wild. I don't know if I would call it cool. it's stressful.
Well, it's not as top heavy. It's not stressful. As top heavy as we thought it would be, but it at least opens the door to a lot of programs here down the stretch, right? It opens the realm of possibilities for teams.
I mean, I think it's more likely that we end up having 6 or 7 Big 12 teams in the NCAA tournament than what we saw a couple of years ago, like when Texas and OU, they were in the Big 12, and we were talking about 10, 11 teams in the Big 12 in the NCAA tournament.
We're going to see.
My gut tells me we're probably going to end up with like six.
Well, six means none of those teams get in.
Yeah, I think it's...
I guess one would probably find their way in. I guess you get... I think it'll be seven, and I think it's there's probably like a 50-50 chance it's seven or eight would be my guess at it right now. I think it's good for the conference to some degree. It's not as top-heavy as we thought. Like, the league is not as top-heavy as we thought it would be. It is top-heavy with Houston, and, like, that's probably it. I mean, in reality. And then probably outside of Houston, has any team lived up to its expectation this year?
I would still put Iowa State there. I know they went through a little bit of a lull.
But 21-5, that would have you probably would have taken that if
really,
you were Iowa
they're
State.
They're a really good team. They had a couple of stumbles. Texas Tech I would put up there as well. Although, you know, Texas Tech just got upset by TCU.
I guess as up against their own expectation, right. Probably they would take that. Tree Eslada joins us next. He's going to help us with this KU stuff. Come right back.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. Jump the gun a little bit. Tree Eslada is our next segment. We're going to talk a little football here. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you about your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning's easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, listen to KFH Radio, listen each day for a minimum of an hour for your daily entry. It includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with this national contest right there at KFHradio.com. Stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination, and visit the biggest March Hoops party at Stadium Swim. Glad to be back with you. We're going to pivot away from college hoops a bit here and talk some Chiefs football. It was Nate Taylor, Tommy, yesterday reporting that the Chiefs don't have a plan to franchise tag anybody. That doesn't surprise me. I don't know. That never really entered my realm of thought of options for them, of their impending free agents. A Menehue would be too expensive. Bolton would probably be too expensive. You're not going to tag a safety, I don't think. I've thought about this a lot. I don't think that I picked the Chiefs the year after they lost to Tampa in the Super Bowl, but I think I've picked the Chiefs every other year since then. And I'm kind of finding myself at this crossroads. Like, and obviously we got to see the offseason play out. It's good. Next year feels like a rebuilding year to me to some degree, Tommy. I'm not sure that I have them getting to a point where they're going to be a Super Bowl favorite before the season. They've got so much work to do. Trey Smith, there's no way they're going to tag Trey Smith. Like, they don't have the kind of room in the cap to do some of this stuff. They'd be better off trying to see if you can push some of that money back with Trey Smith, right? And see if you can get it later down the road than to tag them. They have a lot of things that they have to do this offseason. And one very, very, very glaring thing that's one of the most difficult things to do in football, which is find a left tackle. I don't know. It feels like next year may have to be a little bit of a reset year. And that'll depend on Travis Kelce and what he decides to do and all of those things. But, man, it's beginning to look pretty daunting.
It might have been a little bit different with the franchise tag situation for a guy like Trey Smith if the way that the NFL let you tag or had you tag offensive linemen was different. Because remember, they group all the offensive line together to get the value in which you have to tag somebody on the line. They don't break it out by tackles and then guards. It's everybody. It's just the average of everybody. And so if, you know, if it was broken down by just the guard position, then the franchise tag probably wouldn't be as much for them to tag Trey Smith. But because you're adding in left tackles and the amount of money that those guys get and like that sort of thing, that shoots up the price tag for the franchise tag, you know, for somebody like Trey Smith. So I do think it's out of the realm of possibility for them to do that. And I just think that they've got to get creative, you know, and I think everybody, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. I think that Trey Smith is gone because he's going to get a lot more money out on the open market than what the Chiefs are going to be able to pay him. But then from there, you've got to get creative. You've got to go, I think you've got to go all in on left tackle. And I think by all in, I think that means in free agency. I don't think that means in the draft. So you've got to get creative on how you pay that person.
I don't know how you can afford that. That's the problem there.
Are you willing to, I mean, because the Chiefs have done this so many times before, are you willing to once again go back to the well to try to find a starting left tackle at number 31 in the draft? Because that hasn't worked.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's one of the problems, by the way, that I foresee next year is they won't be likely in a good draft position.
Yeah, they're not picking high enough, I don't think, to be able to go and get somebody.
Unless they were to sell out their draft to move up. But I don't think they can afford to do that either because they're going to have way too many other places. They have to rely on the draft to fill some of these spots. And so, I mean, I suppose there could be some sort of restructuring from Jones and Mahomes and Kelsey if he comes back that would allow you a little more financial wiggle room to attack it in free agency. But they don't have the money to go get Ronnie Stanley if that's the guy that you want. Like, they don't have it anyway. So there's already that component, which is one of the reasons, like, it feels a little rebuilding, you know, it feels like a rebuilding year. Because if you just stood pat and drafted all your players, yeah, they'll probably have to swing again in the first couple of rounds at left tackle and hope for the best. But they're also going to have to potentially do that now for an interior lineman and probably at least a pass rusher and a secondary player. Those are things they have to do, assuming they let Reed walk. I think Bolton is the most likely to come back, but then if he doesn't, now you got to go. You know what I mean? There's too many things they have to attack to just easily do any of them.
Don't count this out as a possibility. And I want to disclaimer here. Want to point out, I don't think this is the right decision, but if they do it, I wouldn't be overly shocked because I do think it could be on the table. They could approach Juwan Taylor and say, Juwan, we're paying you like a left tackle. We need you to play left tackle next season. And we're going to go draft a first rounder. We're going to try to, I'm just telling you, it may not be a permanent thing for you to play left tackle, but we need to put you in that position. You've got an entire offseason to get ready for it. We're going to put you in there. We're going to draft a left tackle early in the hopes that they can succeed you. Because one thing to keep in mind, they've got both Wanya Morris and Kingsley Suamataia, who, while neither one of them were good this last year, they might be a little bit more serviceable on the right side of the line as opposed to the left side of the line. Again, I'm not suggesting that's the right decision, but they've got a lot of money tied up in Juwan Taylor right now to play a position that is not as impactful as on the left side of the line.
If you gave me the option of go draft another left tackle at 31 or play Juwan Taylor at left tackle, I'll take my chances in the draft. I'm not a Juwan Taylor guy. Like, he can barely handle right tackle. I'm not putting him at left tackle.
They're paying him like a left tackle. That's absolutely
a mistake. But there's no chance I put Patrick Mahomes' blindside in the hands of Juwan Taylor.
Would you rather put his blindside in the hands of Suamataia?
Would I rather? No, I'd rather have it. That's what I'm saying. If that's my option, I would start with a fresh start at left tackle through the draft, or even if that's not the option, if it's continued development of one of those two guys versus Juwan Taylor, Really? That can't be an option.
Let's be clear. So if let's just get the draft out of like the conversation for a second. Let's say they don't do that. Let's say they don't have the money to go get anybody in free agency. And your choice is to start week one at left tackle, Jawan Taylor, Wanye Morris, Kingsley Suamataia.
It's not going to be the option. So I don't like
answer the question. Like I'm asking the question. Like I think it could be that could be on the table.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's not going to be on the table. So I don't know how to answer it. I mean, it won't be. Those won't be the only three options. And if they are, it will be a colossal failure. I would rather have a first round rookie than any of those guys. Let's start there. I'd rather have a second round rookie than any of those guys. That's where I'll go. Or give me Joe Tooney back out there and just roll the dice that way. Like Jawan Taylor to left tackle to me is a non-option. Because he can barely handle right tackle. He'd be an absolute liability out there. And now you've got two liabilities, like even more than you had this past year, because now one of those other guys has to go play right tackle, where all the best pass rushers come off the edge, that left edge. So no way. They've got to address it a different way. And it's gonna be the draft, I think. It's how aggressive. The problem for me isn't that. I think it's going to be in the draft because I don't think they can afford a free agent. I suppose they could make a trade. Like there could be a tackle out there. They've done that several times. They did it with Orlando Brown. They did it with Jawan Taylor. That would be another option for a good, not quite free agent player that's on a team that would be willing to give up that asset. I suppose that we should consider that option because the Chiefs have done it twice. Hadn't worked out. But it worked out in the short term with Orlando Brown. Orlando Brown was significantly better than anything else they've run out there lately. Right. So that's another option, I suppose. The whole thing for me is though, the best option is to move up in the draft and finally get a high pedigree tackle. One of those guys who the chance for failure is very low, right?
What are you willing to give up to move up? I think that's the question.
And that's where this all starts for me. But because if you were to do that, it would cost you a lot of draft capital. They have so many other holes to fill. Now, would I be willing to do that? I sure would. Like I'd be willing to do that to solve left tackle at the mercy of the defense not being as talented next year for a year. I would absolutely be willing to do that. The reason I brought all this up is if you do that, can you then pick the Chiefs to go back to a Super Bowl next year? And that's what I mean. Like I would be totally fine if they did that because I think it like long term solving left tackle is far more important than replacing talent on the defense. And sorry, Spags, that's just the way it is. Mahomes is just more important. But it's going to make it tough on the team if that's the path they have to go down. But I do think it's the best option. And if it's the best option, it's at the behest of a lot of these other players. And so it's going to be a challenge next year. And what would I be willing to give up? If you could guarantee me that I was getting that dude, I'd give up anything. Because I think this problem has been there too long. In a one-year scenario, I'd give up anything to do it. To solve left tackle, you could give me holes everywhere else that could potentially be a hole through this offseason, but you have to know that really diminishes their chances to get back to another Super Bowl next year. I think more likely what we've seen historically is it's going to kind of cost them for 2 years in a draft, right? At least two. Can you find a partner who's willing to take a first, maybe a third this year, maybe a second next year, then maybe another second a year after that. That would be the kind of trade the Chiefs would probably would most likely prefer to do because you sort of soften the blow over a handful of years. And I think while a lot of teams wouldn't like that, when you have Mahomes, I think you can kind of do that stuff, right? Like Mahomes always raises your floor to the chance of a Super Bowl. So, you know, even as you're having to retool and rebuild a little bit, I think that's okay. The question then becomes how much urgency do the Chiefs feel with Kelce and Chris Jones and even Andy Reid to some degree to try to do something next year? Because if that's the case, I don't know what the answer is.
And
that's my point in all this.
I was really curious about this. So I went and looked it up. All the teams in the NFL right now, all 32 teams, when you look at their starting left tackles, over half of those starting left tackles were drafted in the first round. Whether or not they're with their original team or not.
It's the answer, yeah.
They're all in the first round, and the lowest in the first round was drafted 23rd overall. Okay, so you've got other teams that, like, they've got a starting left tackle that, you know, they were drafted in the second round or fourth round, or like, but it's all the other rounds, and then even there's like two undrafted free agent or undrafted players that are starting left tackles in the league. But all the other rounds of the draft combined make up for less than half of the starting left tackles in the NFL right now. Everybody else, more than half of them, were drafted in the first round either by their original team or they were traded to their current team. And again, it's Christian Darrisaw was drafted at 23rd overall. He's the lowest one in the first round that was drafted as a starting left tackle. So there's not a whole lot, at least like in the league right now, of starting left tackles that are drafted in the late 20s or early 30s that are starting right now.
It's a great stat, or later, like into other rounds.
Right.
And it's why I always say it's one of the most difficult things to do, to have to solve that position when you're never in a position to just draft one, which the Chiefs are not. It's I would have to go look to like compare what you just talked about with other positions, but outside of quarterback, just it appears to my memory as I try to like just do like a mental, you know, filing of things, like left tackle is the next hardest one to find later in a draft. Like left tackle is very much a pedigree. There's a certain level of athleticism that comes with it. It's like quarterback. Like it's really hard to get one outside of the front part of the first round. It happens. It happens from time to time.
Isn't that why it's a little bit surprising that the Chiefs leaned on a guy in Wanya Morris that they drafted in the fifth round? You know, and then a guy like Kingsley Suamataia that they drafted, yeah, in the second round, but it was like obviously late in the second round. Like maybe not having them on the roster, but entrusting them with that position where they were drafted, that doesn't happen in the NFL right now. Like the impact left tackles are the ones who are taken at the top of each draft. That's just the way it
always is. Always. Like if it's not a quarterback or if it's not a pass rusher, it's almost always a left tackle, right? At the very top. So he was, yeah, the end of a second round. I don't know that they had a lot of better options last year in reality.
Yeah, again, I'm not saying that having those guys on the roster is in and of itself a bad thing.
Right. Nobody's closing the book on either one of those players, but I am closing on the book of the idea of either of them being the starting left tackle to start next season. Like you just can't do that. So then what? And that's not the only way, again, that the Chiefs have tried to do this. They traded for Orlando Brown, who is a right tackle, to try and make him a left. And he did okay, but not good enough for their standard of being paid that way. And then they did the same thing with Juwan Taylor. He's never played a snap over there, nor should he. Those were two ways that they failed. So they failed through the draft. They failed through trade. That's why I say, like, to me, the only path, because I don't think they have the money to just go pay one, is to move way up in the draft. And if you do that, and they have the other losses to the roster through free agency that it appears they will have, you're going to have a lot of holes on the roster this year and not the draft capital to fill them. That this is where I'm coming to, like, right now, and I'm going to look, the Chiefs are magicians in every offseason. So I'm not saying like, I'm not picking the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl next year. Go, like, no, what I'm saying is the path for that is far less clear to me right now than it has been in some other years. Like they're probably going to have too many needs, with that one glaring need requiring them to do the thing that won't let them fill the needs of the other spots, which is trade a bunch of draft capital to just move up, take a high pedigree guy, and be done with it for the next 5 years.
I think for me, again, it goes back to the performance in the Super Bowl, because if you remember, you mentioned the Orlando Brown signing. If you remember, they were aggressive to try to go get left tackle taken care of after the showing against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. They were exposed in that game. They kind of sold out to go get Orlando Brown. I think the same thing will probably happen again. Now, it might look a different way. They might have to trade up in the draft, like whatever. But again, whether or not they actually are able to restructure contracts and get enough cap room to go and sign a high-impact free agent left tackle, I don't know if that's as likely. But if they do that, or if they trade up to, I don't know, maybe pick 15 and above to go and try to get their left tackle of the future. I think they'll do. I think they'll sell out one way or another to go and do that. If they don't, this is where I will be then critical of the Chiefs and Brett Veach in this offseason, is if they don't make a move in the draft and they draft a left tackle at 31 overall, when history shows that usually those guys are not impactful. If they just go ahead and draft a left tackle there at 31, and then they make no other move in free agency, to me, that's going to feel a whole heck of a lot like what they did last season with Suamata'i, and it didn't work. But I do think because they were exposed in the Super Bowl, I think they'll sell out a little bit more. They'll be more aggressive to take care of that.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Shreyas, what did you do? What have you done? I'm telling you, it's a day here on Sports Daily. Shreyas Lada joining us, KU beat reporter for the KC Star. You can follow him at SHRE98. Find all his work. What the hell was that last night?
A disaster, much like what the season's been so far for KU basketball. Came in preseason ranked number one. I don't think they've looked the part since mid-November. Against Iowa State, maybe. I haven't seen them look the part in extended games. And the worst part about it is like, you know, it's the stuff I've written and talked about since mid-December, and now they've just piled on and had even more issues. They can't get to the free throw line. They don't make enough threes. They don't take enough threes. They have clear roster construction issues. You know, I'm tired of hearing about, oh, you know, we've talked about it. We've done this. We've done that. You know, Bill Self talked about it before the game, how, you know, they've done enough talk. Okay, then they lose by 34. Maybe they should just stop talking, period. Like, there's nothing to do at this point. That was one of the most embarrassing displays of basketball I've ever seen for a team as talented as Kansas is. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to never be in a game. And it's a third thing to do it with the oldest team in NCAA right now and look like you just learned how to play basketball last week.
What sums it up for me, Shreyas, I think, is that throughout the game last night, and it wasn't just the BYU game, it's been this way for quite a while now. I think everything was exposed and put on full display last night for sure. But I'm going through my mind and I'm thinking, okay, if Kansas needs to make a shot, who do they go to? I don't know. If Kansas needs to make a stop, who do they go to? I don't know. If they need to get a rebound, who do they go to? I don't know. And I think that encapsulates everything. There's nothing at all consistent that you can lean on whatsoever with this team.
No, 100%. And, you know, this is the issue. I mean, like, this is one of the many issues this team has is, you know, the guys that are supposed to be the guys. When you ask yourself the last couple of years, even 2022, the teams that have had good Kansas teams, how talented they are, or just another level of talent than what they Hunter Dickinson and Zeke Mayo are. No disrespect to Zeke Mayo. He's been great. He's probably one of the few guys you can sit there and say, I think he's done well from the transfer portal for Kansas. But Hunter Dickinson is not Jalen Wilson. He's not Grady Dick. He's not Ochai Agbaji. He's not Christian Braun. He's not a lot of these guys. And no disrespect to him, but he has too many games where I feel like he just doesn't do anything at a half. And you look, he has 4 points on 5 shots, and then he ends the game with 15 points on like 5 of 12 shooting or 6 of 13 shooting. And the only thing he does is shoot around the rim. I mean, he takes 1 3 a game. He shouldn't be shooting that bad. If that's your entire game is built around offense, then you got to be more efficient than he is. And maybe the spacing around him isn't good. We know KJ and DeJuan are not doing him any favors. But I think everyone talked about the Hunter Dickinson addition as this great thing that, you know, they landed the number one transfer portal guy so much. All the national media talked about it. I think everyone expected more than what we've seen from Dickinson and this KU team the last 2 years. I said on Twitter, I think about it, And I was like, you know, last 2 weeks, I was like, are they better than last year's team? And after yesterday, I don't think they're better than last year's team, which is really crazy to say.
Yeah.
That's insane to say.
They're better on paper, but they're not playing better. And and that's where, like, for me, Hunter Dickinson, who can roll out of bed and go 16-8, is the problem. I mean, it's the elephant in the room of the last couple of years. DeJuan Harris was the starting point guard on the last national championship team.
Yeah.
Right? KJ Adams doesn't have an important enough role to be that impactful to what we're seeing. I disagree with fans on that. It's Dickinson. And now it makes me wonder, and I think he said all the right things after the game, but he's just not a leader like that, like Bill Self needs that guy to be historically. I mean, could we ever imagine Frank Mason or Devontae Graham or Jalen Wilson or Ochai Agbaji letting this sort of psychological mess happen on a KU basketball team? Because that's hard for me to imagine. And Dickinson, if he's going to be that guy, which they're making him that guy, he just doesn't seem to bring any of that other stuff off the court to the table, for at least that anybody's buying into on that roster.
Yeah, I think it's just weird to watch from afar and even up close. You know, I think Dickinson has handled this season as well as anyone could handle it. You know, right. He's great press conference-wise. He hasn't blamed anyone but himself, you know, and the team and getting better. And I think that's a lot of maturity. You know, I think I've seen from him in this last 2 years than I think I expected him from what I saw in Michigan. But I agree. And I think I go back to this, and I've talked about this with some of the media guys on the KU beat, is when you, and we talked about this a little earlier, when you need somebody to create their own shot, there's not a guy on this team that I can say, hey, give him the ball and create the shot. Maybe Zeke Mayo, but he's a little shorter, so it's tougher to create a shot. And if Hunter Dickinson is your number one scorer, number one offensive guy outside of Zeke Mayo, the issue becomes his kind of space that he takes up in the post, the little dribble, back down, you know, baby hook that he does. I think psychologically, it does something to KU shooters because they're just sitting on the corner waiting for a possession to play out. And a lot of times, you know, they're not getting the dump off that they might need. And he can't create his own shot. He can't create shot for his teammates consistently. So then you ask yourself, okay, what can he do well? Well, you know, he's a good offensive player and he's a good rebounder, but then they go against Utah and he gets 7 rebounds against a lengthy, you know, court, back full court, like they had. And then he drops 14 rebounds against BYU, but it didn't matter because I think KU still got out rebounded. And a little bit of that is KJ Adams not being a good enough rebounder, of course, but it just feels like the fit behind the three guys, like those three guys just don't coexist. And then the guys they brought in from the portal have been an unequivocal disaster. AJ Storr has been horrendous. And I'm tired of talking about if they gave him more minutes. Every time they give him an extended to play, he's been awful. Against any good team, he's looked bad. Rylan Griffin, he shows flashes. He shows certain games where he looks good, but he's clearly in his own head about it because I don't see a consistency game in, game out. David Coit, he's like 5'11". I don't expect that much out of him. If he makes a couple threes a game, that's great. I'm thinking who else? It's just not been what anyone expected. Flory is a good and promising player, but he's a freshman that is not ready to have a real offensive role yet, and you can see that on the offensive end. And it is why we're looking at this team, and I looked at them start triple big last night, and I just looked exasperated is the word I'd use at that lineup. I was like, I cannot believe that is a real lineup that we're using in 2025. This is not 1975. And I'm like, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not Bill Self. I'm not a Hall of Fame coach. Who am I to say that doesn't work? But I was like, I don't think this is a good lineup. And then they start off another game on a bad, you know, start, bad energy. They can't play defense as well. The shots are not going down. And I think Bill realizes his mistake because Rylan Griffin comes out and starts instead of Flory in the second half. It's just, to me, you know, every time you think this team could turn a corner, they can't put together two games where they look like a good basketball team. It hasn't happened since mid-January. They're 8-7 in conference play. Last year, guys, they had 8 losses. Do we really think they're not going to have more than 8 losses with the way their schedule is looking?
They will.
They're going to lose to Houston. They're probably going to lose to Texas Tech. They could lose on senior night. I think they'll beat Colorado just because Colorado's god-awful, and Oklahoma State because they're bad too. So I'm thinking maybe 2-3 wins out of the remaining 5 games. They're going to go limping in to the Big 12 tournament, probably have to play on a Wednesday, which, you know, doesn't happen for a Kansas team. Probably get a 7, 8, 5, 6, 7 seed, whatever, and probably lose in the first 3 rounds of the NCAA tournament, depending who they play.
Yeah, let's real quick talk about Bill Self, because obviously the players are not executing, but things are compounding as well. Bill Self's the GOAT, right? Like, he's a Hall of Famer. He's had a terrible coaching year as well, and he's had a terrible roster construction year once again. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show that, you know, he ran back 60% of the starting lineup from an 11-loss team, thinking that the supporting cast around them just needed to get better. But really, a lot of the issues have been with those 3 guys that he returned. And I think that starting lineup last night just encapsulates, like, the desperation grasping at straws. Like, hey, we're going to throw 3 bigs out there against a BYU team that likes to launch up threes. And I think that from the lineup perspective, from the in-game adjustments, I think part of the reason why guys like Griffin and Storr aren't producing, number one, they're just not executing, and that's on them. Mm-hmm. But number two, they're not given any kind of grace from Bill Self either. They make a mistake, their butts on the bench, when these other guys, the big three, are making mistake after mistake after mistake, and they're still playing in a game. It's kind of a double standard there. What have you seen from Bill Self?
No, I agree. And I think you go back to how much does he trust these guys? He clearly trusts those 3 more than he trusts anybody else on this team, to the detriment or to the benefit of KU basketball. He's going to ride and die with his guys. And honestly, I respect that, because he clearly knows what's going on behind the scenes at practice. He clearly knows how these guys are acting, how much effort and time they're putting into the game. I'm not seeing that. I can hear things, you know, but it's not the same. And to me, you know, I don't know if there is a solution. Tomorrow you say, let's bench KJ Adams and put in Ryland Griffin and AJ Storr in the lineup, and we bench like DeJuan Harris or something, or, you know, you put in Zeke Mayo at the one and put AJ Storr. I don't think that lineup would have won them a game against BYU.
No,
I think maybe they lose by 30 instead of 34. I mean, come on, like, the defense would have fell off. I mean, this is my thing. It's like, you know, they have these moments where they look like a competent basketball team when they leave team scoreless for 6.5 minutes. And in a competent basketball team, you would cut a lead that's 15 or 10 to more than 10 or 15, but Kansas makes it a 9-point lead or an 8-point lead instead of a 10-point lead because they can't score the basketball.
Yeah,
they were 46th in adjusted offensive efficiency before yesterday's game. I bet you that number went down after last night.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just not good enough. It's not good enough basketball on the offensive end. And I don't think their defense is bad, but it puts so much pressure on the defense to perform that eventually it's going to crack, right? And, you know, I don't think they're number 5 in the nation defense like KenPom says they are, but I certainly think they're a much better defensive than offensive team.
It's all bled over now. They can be a top yeah. 5 defensive team, but now it's all it is really good. And look, Bill Self doesn't make a habit of starting 3 bigs. He's doing anything he can to try and switch it up. It didn't work, but like, he's trying to do something. It's a mess, and now it's a psychological mess, and now we'll find out what that means, right? And I guess in the next game, we'll see how this team responds. I'm not sure their DNA is to respond the way they're going to have to respond, because we've never seen that from this particular mix of players. So follow Shreyas's work at the KC Star on X, all the places. Shreyas, we appreciate it. What a mess.
Thanks for having me. I think they'll respond, but it's Oklahoma State, so it doesn't matter. I've said this before. They're going to be a bad team.
Respond, you know? Against
Yippee.
You know, anybody, Yippee. Anything, any response. I don't care what it is.
I don't buy it. Like, to me, it doesn't matter how they play at home. Like, they're going to win games at home more often than not, just because that's the Fieldhouse Magic.
Yep.
And they're probably going to beat Colorado because Colorado's got awful. But they're going to lose to Texas Tech probably. They're going to definitely lose on the road to Houston. And their senior year streak of, 20-plus years of winning on senior day is probably in jeopardy.
They'll get it. Tommy, that'll do it for a Wednesday. I don't even know what day it is with all the cancellations and snow outside and the wildly disappointing last couple of nights of college basketball for K-State and KU for different reasons. Come on, Wichita State, pick us up.
We got to
pick us
have
up
it.
Later this week.
And you know what? Look, like they upset Memphis over the weekend.
I know.
So we've got
and
a little
on
bit of
and they're on a
going.
Heater. They're on a heater. Yeah. They're on a win streak. Like, pick us up, Shockers. Pick us up. We'll talk about that game tomorrow. We'll also have Tim Fitzgerald in, our K-State insider. What a bummer day. Thanks a lot, KU. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll be recharged, ready to roll. See you then.